Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Ken Wilson. Ken is the president of the Appraisal Institute, the 2014 president. He's held many other offices in that organization. He's been involved in the real estate appraisal profession for more than 35 years. Following a 12-year career with two national appraisal firms, he started his own valuation and consultant firm in Dallas named Wilson Realty Advisors. Ken, welcome to our show.
Hello, Bruce. Glad to be with you today.
Let's talk a little bit about the Appraisal Institute. What size membership does it have, and what service does it provide its members?
Well, right now our membership is approximately 22,000. That's both domestic as well as international. We're currently in about 60 countries on six continents. And services to our members, we basically hold the body of knowledge for real estate valuation. We have a wealth of publications and coursework that is well-respected and might have even heard the words world-renowned. So we provide our members, as well as the general public interested in taking our courses, with a wealth of knowledge on the valuation profession.
Is there consistency throughout the world on how properties are appraised? That's an interesting thought. I wouldn't have thought to ask the question.
Well, I'd like to say yes, but not really. There should be, but we have a lot of parts of the world where the valuation profession is just now, evolving and coming into its own and maturing a little bit. And as part of our membership drive, we also travel throughout the world. The Appraisal Institute can't be all things to all people, so we realize that we will not have members or designated members throughout the world. We only go where we're invited and when we're invited, but we many times visit with the governments of countries who are interested in our education, and that's part of our efforts to serve the public trust. And just a recent example, we traveled to Kuwait earlier this year to put on some education, and their valuation profession is just sending out a senior member of maybe the cabinet to look at a building and just basically say, okay, it's worth X number of dollars, and put it on a piece of paper, and that's it. Not a whole lot of research or effort goes into it, and they're interested in evolving the profession and becoming more like the United States.
Okay. The Appraisal Institute goes to bat for an entire industry when there's a crisis like there was in, say, 08 and 09, and there's new legislation trying to be passed. Tell me a little bit about the services that you've been involved in during the last few years and some of the things that may not have occurred to the appraisal world that might have if you guys hadn't have been there.
Well, we have a staff of three plus some administrative support in Washington, D.C. They work very hard. They're on Capitol Hill every day lobbying, Congress and the congressional aides for what's best for the valuation profession, the public in general, and the financial markets. And, we're constantly with the CFPB, discussing homeowner issues, reporting issues, things like that. And there have been some changes now, or they're in the process of making some changes with the HUD manual and things. So we're just an advocate for appraisers and the public good.
Appraisal management companies, really hadn't heard that term used before the recent history. And I know that's probably not true. They have existed, but now they're a more dominant player. What do you think of them? What have they brought into the industry that's positive, and what are some of the negatives that still are being hashed out?
Well, as you suggest, appraisal management companies have been around for a while. They haven't been in the forefront. They were probably existent, just called something different, but they were performing that function. And, just like every other industry, there's good and bad. I think overall appraisal management companies have, taken negative hits on their reputation. Part of the problem is they get a fee to perform the function for a lender from start to finish. So therefore, for. They're trying to maximize their profits, and unfortunately, in many instances, they squeeze the appraiser on their fee. Appraisers are supposed to get reasonable and customary fees, but you know the tangential information we get from the market, in many cases, they're not. So I think that's the bad rap. The good thing about it is it separates the valuation portion of the transaction or the equation from the underwriting and the lending portion, so you can essentially get that independence. Although again, there are reports out there that there still are pressures being applied to appraisers, so the presence of appraisal management companies haven't totally eliminated that aspect of the transaction.
The process of selecting an appraiser, let's say I just randomly call up and say I want to refinance my home. How has the process changed from 10 years ago to today on who ends up showing up at my doorstep?
Well, in terms of selecting the appraiser, the property owner who is attempting to refinance or get their loan originated for the first time has to stay outside of the equation. The appraiser has to be selected by the lending institution and or its appraisal management company representative. And again, this is an attempt to eliminate pressure or coercion on the appraiser. Appraisal management companies, as well as lenders that do not go through appraisal management companies, have approved appraiser lists. They're typically based upon qualifications and experience. Unfortunately, in many instances or most instances, appraisers are being selected based upon who can do it the quickest and who can do it the cheapest.
Okay, and that was really the point of my question, because that is definitely a negative for the industry, that you cannot say, let's use Bob because Bob really understands this particular area and he's the best appraiser I know. If Bob isn't the guy that can do it fastest and cheapest, usually Bob at this point doesn't get to show up.
That's a very accurate statement. And again, it's a rush to get the assignment done quickly and cheaply. And in many instances, there's a flight from quality because you are not getting the best appraiser, the most experienced appraiser, or the one that's most knowledgeable on a particular market area. And that's one of the unfortunate circumstances of the process these days.
Yeah, unfortunately, I guess we can't turn a blind eye to the fact that there is pressure. I'm in the business of buying and selling houses, so I understand that there definitely can be conversations that are attempted to be had with an appraiser that are inappropriate. But on the other case, there's also appraisers that show up for the first time in their life to an area or a county because they were the cheapest or promised it the fastest, and that they're not really serving a good function for anybody either. And so where is there a balance that can be struck with, we can't assume that everybody in the appraisal business is dishonest. That's ridiculous. You know, why does somebody with 20 or 30 years of experience not get the nod when it's appropriate?
Well, again, you make a valid point, and that's one thing that the Appraisal Institute does lobby on the Hill. We're trying to get it. You can't specify to hire someone based upon their designation or the lack thereof, but you can recommend it. And to backtrack a little bit, when I said the homeowner cannot be involved in the selection process, for the most part, that's true. You as the homeowner or the borrower can suggest that I want Bob as the appraiser specifically, but you could suggest strongly to the lender or the AMC, but I do want someone who has experience within my subdivision or the market area, or I want someone that, holds a professional designation within, a particular organization such as the Appraisal Institute, and that you don't want someone, as you suggest, who's coming out for the first time to do their first assignment that just meets the minimum requirements of state certification.
I think that there's an assumption nowadays, and we train investors to buy properties, and they think that appraising is quite easy. They just push a button and there's the number. And then we go out in the field and the number they come up with a push of a button all of a sudden goes through the filter of reality of, well, what you just did is you looked at comps, you didn't look at things for sale, you didn't visually inspect lot situations. And in other words, there's a lot more to it than you think. And I know that the whole industry is under pressure from what seems to be, well, gosh, I can now just push a button and get the same result for, in 10 minutes or 10 seconds or whatever. And it's really not true.
Absolutely not, and it never has been. What you're suggesting in the push of a button would be along the lines of an AVM, and they do play a certain role in the process, but it's highly dependent upon the information that's going in, and some of the inputs aren't necessarily accurate because the source of their information and data, in many instances, are public records, which, as you can imagine, aren't always accurate. Going back to what you said about appraising being simple, it's the furthest thing from being simple. From a commercial standpoint, you're dealing with numbers, dollars and cents, you know, investors' expectations, and I won't say it's easier, but you're dealing with facts and figures. The problem with residential is you're dealing with individuals' emotions, and I've never met a person whose home was inferior to the next person's, and there's always that pressure, and in many markets, there's a lack of good data available, so that just complicates, you know, the issue that much further, and it really comes down to, at that point, an appraiser's judgment based upon their experience and knowledge.
Right. What kind of license is now required to do a residential appraisal?
Well, it's going to depend upon the individual state. We have what we call mandatory states and voluntary states. Even in the voluntary states, where a license or a certification is not required to appraise per se, it's required in order to be involved in a federally related transaction, which essentially means a federal bank making a loan. And under those guidelines, to do residential 1-4 family properties, you are required to hold a residential certification. And to do anything over and above or greater than 1-4 residences, you have to hold a general certification.
Okay. Now, there's a new designation that's very recent called the review appraisal designation. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, review appraisal has been around for quite some time, but it's become much more fashionable and more important in the industry these days as a risk mitigant. The new designation you're talking about is actually two new designations by the Appraisal Institute. It's the first two new designations we've offered in more than 20 years, and they're commonly known as AI-GRS and AI-RRS, the first one being a general review specialist and the second one being a residential review specialist.
So they're already licensed as appraisers, and now they have an additional designation on top of that. Is that correct?
That is correct. And these designations were just rolled out at the first of this year. The qualifying education just became available late last year. And based upon that, for 2014, only currently designated members of the Appraisal Institute that either hold the MAI, SRA, or SRPA are eligible for the review designation. Beginning next year, general appraisers who are not part of the Appraisal Institute will be eligible to achieve that designation once our additional education requirements are available. We had to have some additional coursework developed, and the commercial or general course was just rolled out in July, and the residential course will be rolled out in October. Therefore, once individuals take these courses, go through the experience review and all the other requirements, sometime next year, you'll probably see non-Appraisal Institute members being awarded the new designations.
And the new designation sounds like it's almost a senior position, not, I don't know if that's the right term, but in other words, it's an advanced designation.
Well, using the term senior would be problematic because while we were in the midst of discussions about creating these new designations and doing the research, there was a lot of concern amongst our membership saying that the review designation then would be superior to the MAI or the SRA, and, you know, to the fact they really aren't. You have to have many of the same qualities to review as you would have to write an appraisal. As you can imagine, these review designations just signify that you also have an additional specialty.
Okay. What I'm sure the industry is relieved is that this is not something that you get instead of your appraisal license.
No, absolutely not. you're required to also have a license. To become a member of the Appraisal Institute, in order to start taking our courses and going down the path to receive a designation or earn a designation, I should say, you have to be at minimum state certified.
What is the practical effect of having an original appraisal lowered by a review appraiser? What is the effect on the original appraiser's relationship for the next batch of business?
Well, it depends on the circumstances, and a review appraiser will not necessarily lower or raise an opinion of value by an appraiser. It's more or less a checks and balance to, you know, to make sure that the appraisal makes sense, and it'll also come down to the scope of work involved for the review appraiser. It can be as simple as the review appraiser sits in his office at his desk, he's provided a copy of the appraisal, and he's to determine that based upon the content of that appraisal, the discussion analysis, does the value appear to be reasonable. It could expand beyond that the review appraiser actually does a data check on the comparable information utilized in the appraisal, or it could go even beyond that further, whereby the review appraiser does their own data search. So it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a disagreement, and depending upon the circumstances and the relationship of the review appraiser with the client, with the appraiser, there could be communication pointing out errors or flaws that it would then be incumbent upon the appraiser to correct. If the relationship's not there, that the review appraiser cannot talk to the performing appraiser, then they either have to accept or reject, you know, the value, and then that would trigger, you know, other steps in the process.
If someone in the chain is really, really has a problem with the appraisal number, what is the process to challenge an appraisal?
Well, it depends on, you know, the term defining a problem with the appraisal. Does it just mean you disagree with the value because you don't like it and it doesn't get the deal done? In that instance, you know, you can still say, well, there are these flaws, but it's probably not going to go far. But if you can point out errors and omissions from the appraisal, the square footage is wrong, you know, different things like that, adjustments in the sales comparison approach went in the wrong direction, where you're saying that the comparable is inferior and it should have been adjusted upward, but it was adjusted downward, then you've got the process that corrections can be made. But just the mere fact that somebody doesn't like the number, you know, is not a reason to, you know, start making wholesale changes.
USPAP, what does that stand for, and what function does it have?
USPAP is the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice, and that is basically a doctrine that all appraisers within the United States that are subject to, that's how they have to perform their valuations in accordance with the guidelines and standards of this document.
Okay. We've noticed a lot of discussion in investment clubs. We do rehabs, but the subject has certainly come up on doing green improvements. So what does an appraiser do with green improvements? And I know that there's definitely been courses that you guys have created for that. And I can see from, if you're building a new home, I can understand that the valuation might be a lot easier, but in an existing structure, I'm just not sure how you do it if there wasn't a comparable value. So is there, for both new and used, how is that handled when somebody's really done a fair amount of expenditure on green improvements?
Well, right now, it's a very difficult proposition because many appraisers are not equipped to know what green features are and what to do with them, and therefore it's important for them to take education and understand what the green components and features are in properties and what they really do mean to value. And as you indicated, the Appraisal Institute has a wealth of knowledge and information, and they have many courses that are available. We just came out with a new course book written by one of our members about green valuation, but what it really comes down to is the fact of trying to understand what those features are and getting the data. As you suggest, that data isn't always available, so there are other techniques that you can measure, you know, any potential impact, and I won't say impact, but potential impact on value, and that's a residual technique, you know, through the income approach or cost approach, whereby there are actual cost savings that are identifiable on the energy features, and then you can apply a multiplier to that to come up with some sort of adjustment. Unfortunately, in the recent past, not many people were willing to accept that. Lenders were hesitant to go in that direction, including FHA loans, but now as part of the rewrite of their handbook, they're willing to recognize and accept that methodology. So I think we'll see some improvements in the valuation of green properties and having properties valued to what their true value should be. Not necessarily what somebody really wants to see, though.
Ultimately, I think the customer is the one that raises their hand and says, I'll pay for something or not. And in general, what is the consumer saying to that? Let's make it easier and just say on new structures. Has there been studies saying, well, if this track has no green features and this one does, there's a bonus for the solar feature that you can actually say it exists.
You're correct. Again, you know, the market does make that determination, and on newer properties, when you have you know, some new homes developed in a subdivision and they have these features and they're selling for a greater amount than a comparable property in the next subdivision that doesn't have the features, the market is accepting those because there is a consciousness, you know, amongst the public that, you know, do want to see these features and participate in it. So with that, we have to continue creating the data, and when I say create, not make up, but have more transactions occur that show the benefits of having these green features.
When you do an appraisal, the assumption is by most people that aren't in the business, this is just a matter of it's just comparable sales, but there's other features in the appraiser that sort of like a check and balance. One of them is a cost approach and the other is more like a cap rate or a cash flow. Do you think that the weight of the way the residential world is currently appraising is mostly having to do with comps? And the reason I'm asking the question, in, say, 2009, you had homes in California that would cost $300,000 to construct that wouldn't appraise for $100,000 because that was the comp.
Right.
The difficulty would be when we were rehabbing a property that didn't have a kitchen and so forth, and we would have 20 offers at $160,000 and 9 comps that said $100,000, we were the only one that was fixed. The problem was the comp swayed the value to the lower number. So I guess I'm just looking for answers in the sense there's multiple choices, but it seems like the one that we always land on is the last sale.
Well, in most instances, you know, the sale comparables are the most appropriate to use. In the example you're describing to me, though, it sounds to me anyway that you're suggesting with the rehab that your property was superior to all of the other properties in the market that were selling at 100. And in a situation like that, again, it's incumbent upon the appraiser to understand the data, and there's nothing wrong with them making adjustments to sales that are even, you know, to a lesser degree, to a higher number because of those improvements. You just can't get out of control whereby you're making 50 and 100% adjustments because that throws up red flags.
Right. And see, in Dallas, for instance, you guys had a downturn that was much more mild, but the numbers that I'm using actually occurred. To where it was an interesting time where it was hard to get rewarded for improvements that were really necessary just to occupy the structure, and you'd have multiple offers, but you really had an appraiser in a tough spot because there wasn't that equally fixed house for a while. There was only houses without kitchens anyway.
Right.
There's an interesting term in the appraisal or the definition of market value, and we're down to the last minute and a half, but it undue stimulus. And I think undue stimulus is one of the biggest keys to understanding why valuations change. And that can come in Fed policy by saying, let's give somebody an $8,000 tax credit, or in the mood that we had in, say, 2004 through 6 of let's loan anybody that's breathing money. But as an appraiser, you've really got to be aware of a lot of things other than just comps, as far as when you're thinking about, okay, I've got a four-month-old comp. Is there stimulus in this market that makes that change one way or the other?
And again, you're correct. The appraiser has to understand the entire process. And that's why it's important not to go to just the cheapest and the quickest appraiser. You have to hire somebody who is willing to put the time and effort in, understand the subject property, understand the comparable data, and understand what's going on in the market. And what I'm suggesting here, all of that takes time, and appraiser has to be, you know, fairly compensated for their time. And I think it goes back to that many, many times.
How is the mood of the appraisal world at this point? Only 20 seconds left. Are people hanging in there and still happy they have that as a career?
Well, our research indicates that, you know, many appraisers are upbeat. They see improvement in definitely the residential markets throughout the country, many commercial markets. They see future increases in business. But that being said, the appraiser population has continued to decline over the past 5 and 10 years, over the last 6 years, about 2.6% per year, because it's an aging profession. We're not attracting younger people to the business. People are retiring, going off to do other things, and unfortunately passing away. So right now we're in a little bit of a decline, but we probably will see an increase in the, you know, foreseeable future.
Ken, we've run out of time. We've been speaking with Ken Wilson, the president of the Appraisal Institute. Ken, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.